Clamp may be known for their darker works, but it's easy to forget how much they delight in goofy gag comics. With their love of kaiju movies and sentai shows, it's no surprise that one of their early series would be a send-up of those genres. And you're the Clamp School Defenders Dukleon!
Ray John, our Clamp School Defenders Dukleon!
We're Lucy and Robin, and we'll be your guides through Clamp's Wonderland. Okay, so, you may have noticed we're not talking about Clamp Campus Detectives yet.
Yeah, we're not.
We were going to, and then when we were doing research, we realized we had some of our dates slightly off. I had Dukleon as coming in 92, like a bunch of the other stuff, in Clamp Campus World, but it actually is in 91, so we wanted to start with it, and then we're gonna jump into everything else that was in 92.
Yeah, and we really, like, I think we talked about this before, but I'm just gonna reiterate here that we're not ready for X. It's gonna take at least 6 months to get through it. Yeah. And we figure that we're going to spend the rest of this year on the other stuff from 1992. Mm-hmm. These things all came out around the same time. Like, we're quibbling about weeks and months of 1992 at this point.
Yeah, so though X technically came out before some of the ones we're gonna cover in the next few months, we're just pushing it back. Also, it means that we get to start X in January, the beginning of the new year, which just feels very appropriate.
And we're gonna be able to do Shida Hime Show in December.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, so we wanted to give you guys, like, kind of the next few months kind of a heads up. And this reading list is on our website and Twitter and everything, too. But we are going to do Dukleon this week, obviously. Next time we'll start with Clamp School Detectives, and that will take us through October into November. We will hopefully do The Legend of Chunghwa, which I may be saying very wrong because I do not speak Korean. We may do that in November, possibly December, depending on how long Clamp School Detectives ends up taking us. And then we'll do Shira Hime Shio, and then X will start with the new year.
Yeah.
And who knows?
It's kind of too bad we're not doing X in 2019 because it's an anniversary for 1999, but who cares?
Yeah, it would have been nice to fit in, but I think I like where we stand. I want a bit more of a palate cleanse before we jump into one of their dark things again, and I'd rather kind of knock out some of those short ones before we launch into, like you said, like a 6 months discussion on X.
Plus, this stuff is all really fun. Like, these are all great reads, and it's so easy to forget that they're there because they aren't big franchises. Although, yeah. The Clamp Campus stuff kind of is a franchise. I mean, they haven't done anything for it in a long time. I mean, I don't want to stargaze here, but there was the Horitsuba Academy stuff more recently that was the Holic and Tsubasa combined school story stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, so it's interesting that they came back to that later, but this is so much of their origin.
Mm-hmm.
These characters, this, the idea of this place, we've mentioned before, this was their, like, OC Wonderland. This
yeah.
was a place that they created so that all of the original characters could, like, go have shenanigans, fall in love, fight evil, all the good stuff that you do in high school, right? And
yeah.
Elementary school, too.
Yeah, and they ended up using...
I fought a lot of evil in elementary school.
I mean, everyone did, right? That was just
yeah, we're very... Like, but little kids are, like, very concerned with justice, just mostly in the fairness zone. But then it's still
true,
justice.
It's true. But yeah, so that's gonna give us kind of through the end of the year. So if you are kind of following along at home and you wanna, you know, start catching up on that, I'd start collecting X now if you don't own it and you want to own it, because it's, I think, 18 volumes, right?
Yeah, it's also not difficult to get a hold of, even though I don't believe it's particularly in print, but it was also reissued in omnibuses, I believe.
Yeah,
which Tokyo Babylon was as well, and we didn't talk a lot about that because we both have our old copies from the Tokyo Pop run, and a lot of these things have been reissued. This one has not. Dukleon is... You know, hopefully you've read it. If you haven't, like, we're going to give you a nice overview, but it's two volumes, pretty easy to pick up, even just vintage. I mean, you can find it online, find it at used bookstores, but also it is available. You said that it's ebooks, e-manga?
Yeah, it's through Amazon, called Kindle and Comixology. I have not done it myself, but I think so far everything we've talked about is also on there.
That's digitally. Great.
And I do know I bought Dukleon Volume 2 for like $10 on Powell.com. It took me a little bit for it to be available, but I think I ended up spending no more than like $9.50 or whatever.
Yeah.
So you can definitely get your hands on it if you want it in one way or the other. It is delightful, so I would recommend it.
Yeah, I think it's time for us to, like, launch into our discussion, and let's please start with, this was a great read.
Yeah, this was one that kind of like Man of Many Faces. I was a little bit, like, expecting to be kind of bored or, you know, too intelligent for or something, but it was actually just delightful and fun and... Well, you know, silly and obviously, but, you know, totally owning what it was.
When I fell back down the clamp hole, like, 4 years ago, which I think I've brought up before that there are some reasons why we're doing this podcast, and one of them was me needing to go reread all of Clamp for personal reasons that are kind of associated with Tokyo Babylon, but I think I'll talk more about a little bit later.
Yeah, there's a lot we're going to be able to talk about once we get to X.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like... like, personal stuff, the weirdness of, like, our childhoods, because that was so much a part of my high school experience. But when I went down that clamp hole a few years ago, I mean, I should say down the rabbit hole, so it fits with our Alice in Wonderland, Clamp in Wonderland theme, but I'm calling it the clamp hole because that's, we're kind of nasty here.
I think
here.
The metaphor's already there. Like.
Yeah. But, I remember rereading this, and maybe, I don't think I'd ever read all of it, because we bought it back in the day, and I'm sure, I know I read a chunk of it, because I remembered it, but there were parts of this ending that I'm not sure I actually remembered, and I was like, wait a minute, is this the first time I read this? This is hilarious. Why is this not everybody's favorite Clamp comic? Like, it's so funny.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain that I'd never finished it, because I, like I said, I owned the first volume, and I'm pretty sure I read it and was like, okay, I know what this is, but then never got the second volume, which is why I went on this journey to buy it, which wasn't very hard. I just, it's like, for some reason, listed it's $20 lots of places, and that was more than I wanted to pay, just because I am now a poor college student again.
Okay, so Lucy, hit us with some quick facts about its publication.
Alrighty, so it ran from 1991 to 93 in New Type Comic Genki, which is basically the manga supplement of the magazine New Type, which is like the anime magazine, and it was published by Kadokawa Shoten. It came out in, yeah, like I said, 91, and then it was also, you know, published in two volumes after its initial serialization. And kind of to give us, like, a reference of the Clamp timeline.
Lucy is the keeper of the Clamp timeline. Of the two of us, that is definitely...
I'm excited about it. I have a very bad graphic that someday I will make into a good graphic and then share with people. So, at the time when it started, Reg Veda was about a third of the way through, Tokyo Babylon was kind of barely a quarter of the way through, and their only other publication, like, official big publication, was Man of Many Faces.
Man of Many Faces also ran in the same New Type supplement.
Yeah, it took us a little digging to figure that out, because most places were listing just the publisher. We were able to figure it out.
As though Kadokawa Shoten is the, like, magazine or whatever, and you're like, no, that's the name of the publisher who made all the stuff. Like, what's the magazine it ran in? Because that's actually interesting information. And one thing about that is that that is an otaku magazine, so this was definitely going to be read by people who understood the joke. Like, this was, like, you were in on the joke. Like, you probably knew all the source material that these things, like, because this and Man of Many Faces have an element where they're kind of a parody, and they're kind of a romance at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that they blended those two, but I can see how that would be, like, that might have even stood out a lot at the time, but it would still be very much, like, for that audience. We brought up that it's a send-up. It's a send-up of, like, tokusatsu and sentai shows particularly. There's always little, like, kaiju movie references throughout their stuff, like Gamera Hall, which we mentioned in Man of Many Faces, comes back in this. Like, that's just one of the Clamp Campus, like, auditoriums is Gamera Hall, right?
Yeah.
Like, who doesn't have, I mean, like, we have Mokueta Hall at my old high school. It's not true at all. It's just my favorite kaiju.
I want to go to, like, the Godzilla library or whatever.
Yeah,
to study,
it's great.
You know, it would be amazing.
But tokusatsu and sentai stuff are, like, big cultural artifacts that in America we would really only be able to liken to Power Rangers, right? Because this is superhero stuff, and some of them are not so much superheroes as they are space detectives or space police or monster hunters or whatever, but usually wearing some kind of armor or transforming into some sort of robot. These are live action shows. Usually the production values, like, they're super high these days. They weren't super high back in the day. Because, I mean, what was?
Mm-hmm.
There was no money. These are old. They've been around for decades and decades and decades. They're a very stylized format.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there will be shows that really break the mold and change everything, and now there's a new genre. Sometimes they will be very straightforward, but they're really about selling toys to 10-year-old boys. And so they have a lot of, like, each episode needs to have these four elements and always be like this. They're very, very similar to, mm-hmm. I mean, anything like, of this kind. And of course, like, Americans or any other market who grew up with stuff like Power Rangers, where they took out all the Japanese sections... Like, yeah. Any section where you could see, like, the people outside of the fights, they just made their own stories and, like, reshot it with a diverse American cast.
Yeah.
And I think they did that. I don't think they just gave other countries the same cast. I think other countries may have done this, but it was mostly Haim Saban's crazy idea to sell Power Rangers toys here, but still make something that fit what he thought would fit in an American market. That is a whole other story that is really not pertinent to this, because that, like, Power Rangers is so far from this, but anyone looking at this who's American would say, oh, they look like Power Rangers. And yeah. They do. There's the red really one and the blue one. And Clamp says that specifically, there are two big influences on this. One of them was Kidokeiji Jibon, Mobile Detective Jibon, which they say is from the space detective genre, and I just love that there is an entire space detective genre for, like, tokusatsu shows.
That's kind of amazing that it's a subgenre in and of itself.
Yeah, they're like, okay, well, there's aliens, but also mysteries. Also, you are in a robot suit, because duh, because that's so cool. And a lot of that, I mean, that one in particular, when I was looking it up, which also, it has an amazing theme song. These all have the best theme songs. I should also mention that my partner, Will, who is the one editing this, loves this stuff in such a weird way. Like, he loves this stuff, but mostly just loves the opening themes so much. And we periodically just put on, like, mega mixes of, like, 20 years of tokusatsu and sentai openings.
Yeah, can confirm this does happen in the household.
Yeah, so I just have the Kamen Rider opening theme in my head all the time, and if we're lucky, I will not start singing it in this because it's really stuck in my head. But Kidokeiji Jibon is also stuck in my head now. So I said that one was really a big influence on this, but then also Chojin Bottom 1 was another one that was really influential on them, where they literally took the names of the main characters from that show and gave them to these two main characters. And I think we're going to come back. I'm going to put a pin in that because I want to talk about that later when we have other subjects where we're going to discuss, like, what's up with these characters and why they're like this. And I'm like, I want to, we'll put a pin in that and come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
For now, I think we should tell you who these characters are.
Well, I also want just to jump back to the timeline thing really quick because this one came out at such an interesting period in their career that it has so many cameos. Some of them are untraceable. Like, I'm pretty sure that there are characters that they recognize that are from their own alternate, like, projects that never saw the light of day or only ran in their little doujinshi magazines, and like people who are following them at the time maybe know what they are, and they, you know, their friends know, but not, you know, never saw, you know, official publications and stuff. And then so many cameos of characters you do see, but in very small ways. So I thought it was just interesting to kind of, like, put this into perspective that while this one ran, they went from having, you know, three other things to releasing Clamp Campus Detectives, Shidehime Shio, Shuang Huang, Legend of Shuang Huang, however you say it, I'm sorry, Korea, and X, and then Rareth in between, like, when this came out in 91 and 93. I don't know if it was going when Rareth came out necessarily, but it was at least in production at the time. So they had a lot of things going on, and you can tell, because there's a full scene from X, well, bits of a scene from X, just as a movie that the characters are watching, so you can tell that it was also them kind of, I don't know, blossoming as creators, you know? It covered this time and where they really started to take off.
Yeah, there's still a lot of the soul of a doujinshi circle in this, too. Like, mm-hmm. It breaks the fourth wall constantly.
Yeah.
They mention themselves in it. They sometimes draw themselves in the background, which they did for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't remember them doing it for some of the most recent stuff I've read, but, like, in this era, they have little chibi versions of themselves that they would draw that, like, you can recognize who is who by their hairstyle.
Yeah.
But then it's some point their hairstyles change, and you have to, like, they associate each of themselves with a different animal, and, like, but they are, they're not really super active characters in it, but they're sort of present. Yeah. And because their name was given to the name of the school, it's almost jarring every once in a while when the characters mention their creators. Yeah. And it, I think it wouldn't be if they weren't always saying the name anyway, because you're just sort of like, okay, yeah, yeah, Clamp School. Oh, no, no, no. They're literally talking about their creators. Okay, okay. Fourth wall broken, not just fourth wall eroded.
Yeah, like, there's, I think in the X cameo scene, there someone in on the side is like, the Clamp women are so mean!
Yeah.
And they mean them, the authors, not, like, women in Clamp works.
Yeah.
Because they're just talking about how sad exes, and we can't stargaze too much here, but, like, oof.
It comes up, though.
Yeah. Okay, so our Duklyon defenders are Kentaro Higashikunimaru, whose last name I hope to never have to say again because I'm very bad at it. There was much coaching. And Takeshi Shukaido, who are both, I think, freshmen, which is, Japanese high school has 3 years, so they're probably, like, 16.
Yeah.
And then they are organized by Eri Chusonji. And they are all given directions by the director, who is, or I'm sorry, they're all given instructions and led by the general, which we eventually learn is Nokoru Umonoyama, who is also the head of Clamp School. Oh my god, the head of...
Well, okay.
The student council. He is also the chairman of the student council.
Excuse me. He is the elementary school
yes,
class president.
Yes. And we'll get to him much more in Clamp School Detective.
He's the blonde Clamp School Detective.
Yeah.
So here, I'm just going to... I need to say this. We know it's him from, like, the first second you see him. Like, it's obviously, it's a little boy wearing sunglasses. Yes. Right? And he's only ever seen, like, on a screen, and he has two adult lady bodyguards who always have a sign encouraging him, and it's really cute. He is, like, the most over-the-top, pretentious, hilarious, like, flamboyant character ever, but he's also clearly a child.
Yes.
And I did not realize the extent to which you were not supposed to. I mean, like, we all know, but the heroes, our poor Kentaro and Takeshi, like, do they're, not know.
Yeah, they're so oblivious.
Takeshi? Oh my god. Takeshi.
Takeshi.
Totally swapped the syllables of his name.
See? I did it earlier and I broke you. I'm sorry.
I'm so mad. It's so mad at you.
Sorry. Anyway,
I also need to say they are very color-coded. They are red and blue.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie, who is the director, is an adorable girl with double buns on either side of her head. She's mm-hmm. got light-colored hair. It's sometimes kind of blonde and kind of orange and
yeah,
red hair-ish.
Yeah, I read it as kind of redhead.
Yeah,
but it's in, you know, manga kind of colorization, which can take some liberties with...
Yeah, it is whatever. It is the untoned hair.
Yeah.
She's adorable, but she's also really ferocious, and we find out later she's sort of a karate star, and she's tough, and she is constantly yelling at them and whacking them with a mallet in early 90s anime fashion.
Yeah.
Boy, I think that's gone. I think that slapstick thing of whacking people with a mallet is just gone, and I'm glad that is not a part of my childhood manga and anime experience that I cherish, but I remember for so long that was, like, such a visual element you would see, and I think, I just think it's gone now.
Yeah, slight tangent on how old we are. I saw this thread going around about how anime fans now don't know what glomp is, because
that's
it doesn't
great.
Get used.
I'm
I mean,
so
I
glad
think
they
it's
don't know.
Probably great, but I had a weird moment where I was like, how do we know what glomp is? It was used in, like, sound effects in manga, right? That's where that word comes from?
I really think it was just a cultural, an anime convention cultural practice.
I swear it was something used it. This is, we will fact check this
we'll
and get
check
back
that later.
To you, but I swear it was something, like, infamously used it as a sound effect, and then the world just kind of loved it, and so it became a thing.
We probably need to do an episode where we just talk about what it was like to be a fan in the mid to late 90s. Like, we probably just need to do a, like, here is a history lesson for people, and also a blast from the past for those.
Yeah.
I would also love to hear similar stories from people who are not American, because I'm sure that you have different, like, these days with the internet, there's a lot of shared memes, just share language stuff so quickly that actually you might be using the same terms all over the world, but that was not the case in the late 90s, and I would love to know specific nerd in-jokes from, like, Brazil. Like, I would love to know that. Oh my goodness. Like, that would be such a great conversation to have. But that is not a conversation about the Clamp School Detectives, or not, Clamp School Defenders, Duklyon.
Yeah.
So we need to talk about them. Mm-hmm. So they have this, okay. So we have the red one and the blue one. The red one is Kentaro, and the blue one is Takeshi.
Mm-hmm.
Then over them, you have Eddie, who is Eddie-chan. She's amazing. I do love her. She's super tough, and she's hilarious.
Yeah, I feel like she and Hokuto would get along so well.
Or they'd hate each other. Either way, I want to see it.
I have a headcanon where they're just besties.
Yeah.
And they hang out and talk about how the dumb boys, like, they have to, you know, watch out for are doing. Because they both go to clamp school. Like,
they do.
It's very possible.
They do all go to clamp school. Oh, God. Oh, God.
So, our two heroes are superheroes, and the way they get to their base is it's in, like, this bakery, and they have to jump through an oven and hope no one's currently using the oven, and if someone is, they have to get them to, like, move all the bread away and stuff, and it's very adorable. And then they have this whole secret base under this bakery, which is called the Dukleon, the adorable bakery or something, Dukleon, and it's very cute. And it makes me think, I could not verify this, but I swear Dukleon has got to be a pun on something food or something. We're missing something, and I couldn't figure out where the title comes from.
I was certain that it had something to do with Deucalion,
yeah.
Which is a whole Greek mythology thing, but we can't find any good... I mean, there it might be.
Yeah, but it might be, but I couldn't... Based on the amount of research I did on it anyway, there didn't seem to be anything from that legend that would tie it to this.
Yeah, if you know, please tell us.
Yeah, please tell us. This series, I love it, but it has that problem of it came out long ago enough and is obscure enough that there's just not that much information on, like, the current internet. I was finding lots of, like, live journal links and old defunct Angel Fire websites and stuff where none of the links worked, so I could find some information but nothing to verify anything, and it was mostly, you know, fans who were kind of desperate for more Clamp stuff who were trying to, like, you know, get all their knowledge together and figure out what this thing was, and so it wasn't a whole lot of, you know, direct sources.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, if you want to know what it was like to be a fan of anything in the 90s, that.
Mm-hmm.
And the early aughties. The idea that, like, all of this knowledge was out there and you could not find it, so you could just be the king of your own domain simply by collecting all the info, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was so hard to verify anything outside of your own language if you didn't have those language skills. And even if you did, what would you do if no one had ever digitized those files and you would only ever be able to find things that used bookstores? Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
It's still like that now, except faster.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's less looking and, like, there's not as many, like, days, weeks, months, and years of searching for some of this stuff. If you mention it to the right people, usually people can help you find things.
Yeah. But so the series, anyway, especially in the beginning, has a pretty, you know, typical Sentai structure where they're in class, they get summoned because they're mostly arch-rival, which is the Monoyama Shopping District Association, which...
is the funniest name for an evil villain group ever. I don't know whether it is a specific joke because there may be a pun there,
yeah,
in Japanese, and because, oh god, we don't have this in Japanese.
Yeah.
We only have the English versions, and I was trying to find it and I couldn't. So there's probably, like, an obvious pun here where, like, Shopping District Association and, like, Evil Space Empire sound really similar. But
yeah.
Regardless, it's a big, complicated set of words that look impressive and sound fairly sinister. Even if, and on top of it, there might be some implications of, like, what is worse than a bunch of shopkeepers getting together and, like, fighting for legislation that's good for small business and bad for everyone else? The petty yeah. bourgeois are always, always, not to be trusted.
Yeah, so it's amazing. I love it.
So anyway, that's the name of the evil villain group, which is led by, actually, he never gets a name.
Leader, as the villain, yeah.
Yeah, the villain never gets a name, which is kind of an ongoing thing throughout this. Most of the villains do not have any particular, like, names for the character that they are.
Mm-hmm.
He is fabulous. He is, like, my dream character. I want to look like him.
He looks like a kabuki star.
Yes.
Yeah, like...
He has, like, a huge kabuki/rock mullet and, like, makeup, and then everything else is just, like, embarrassing Kiss-esque, like, rock bullshit, where he's just got too many spikes on his stupid outfit.
And, like, the giantest shoulder... accoutrements?
Not
even shoulder pads.
We're beyond, like, shoulder pad. We're straight into pauldrons that are made of goodness knows what and capes all over the place.
Yeah,
and he has two backup mooks who are never named, and they have big stupid hats, and way at the end we find out that they are two priests, and that they're, one of them is a lady, one of them is a dude, and I don't remember which one is which, but there's two, he has, like, two backup guys with big hats, which, who never do anything. Yeah, they're just there.
They're just there to pose with him, really. Like, yes. They don't even do anything threatening. I think they might help summon the, because every episode, quote-unquote, you know, he summons a kaiju of some kind, a monster to fight, or he's trying to conquer the world, is what he's saying.
But he's really starting with the clamp school.
Yeah, and...
And it's really petty. Like, each thing he's trying to do is like, oh, we'll take over the cafeteria so that we get all the food because we're hungry, and then our director, our beloved Nokoru, just always has some ridiculously, like, pretentious way of saying you have to go save the cafeteria, and it's usually going to be something like, oh, you know, nutrition, you know, we can't separate the students from their nutritional needs.
Yeah.
Very over the top, really obviously ridiculous, like, a parody of the kinds of speeches that you would make if this was actually a show about monsters threatening the city and an evil organization. Yeah. But it's all scaled down to this ridiculous school. It is a, I mean, like, we mentioned the Clamp School before a lot in Man of Many Faces, but it is, like, a city-sized school. They mentioned many times that it has, like, 10,000 people who live here. It's got its own movie theater. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It is also, we discover from the very first panel, the streets are laid out so that it is a pentagram.
Yeah, and I believe this is the first time we have seen that. I don't think we saw that in Man of Many Faces. I could be wrong, because I don't actually have my copy anymore. I lent it to people who want to listen to the podcast. Friends, but yeah, I think that's the first time we've actually had that full, like, layout description, which will come up again.
Mm-hmm. But it's so over the top. It's such a fantasy of, like, the coolest school you could go to as an elementary school, middle schooler, high schooler, college, and I believe they have postgraduate programs.
Do they? They're very sophisticated. Yes,
they've got, like, everything.
Yes.
And everything gets attacked by the Imonoyama Shopping District Association. We should mention, Imonoyama is Nokoru's last name.
Mm-hmm.
His family are the founders of the school.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure that they're in any way trying to say that the villains are connected to them, which you would think would be a great plot twist, but that is not the level this story is written. That is not the kind of plot twist we're going to have. We'll get to the plot twist.
Yeah, my assumption just from this, based on nothing but just, like, my brain trying to logic it out in the context of the little series, was that Imonoyama District was where they were, and so they were just naming it after the district they were in because they wanted to sound fancy or something.
Yeah.
And special and official. But yeah, because I almost thought that that was going to be a, like, bait and switch, that it was somehow, like, this was for training Nokoru to organize things, or this was him trying to train other people to defend the school or something, but no.
It is not that deep. It's really not. It doesn't need to be that deep. It's happy to be exactly what it is.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, like, what it is again. Like, we're saying, okay, it's a parody of Sentai stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They get called to fight these monsters being sent out by our fabulous rock star-looking villain. And
yeah.
He does have some, like, henchmen, which in Sentai stuff you would call Sakos, and they have the Heno Heno Moheji face written
yeah.
on there.
Yeah.
So it's just like, yeah, like,
well, you make a face out of hiragana.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So they're, which are easy to draw but also very funny, and, like, really helps put this right in gag manga parody situation. So you're like, yeah, that's not threatening. They're
yeah.
really silly.
It's kinda like writing a smiley face on stuff. It's like a kiddie way to make a face.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're fighting him every time, and little do they know that this fabulous man is actually their classmate, who is named Kotobuki Sugiyabashi. I don't remember what else I was talking about because I was so focused on the name.
Look, this has definitely got a big Clark Kent Superman thing where they're all supposed to have, you know, secret identities, and our heroes, like Takeshi and...
Takeshi.
I did it. Kentaro. I said it fine. Our heroes, Takeshi and Kentaro, have helmets on, so it's fine. Like, no one can tell who they are because they have helmets. But this guy doesn't. He takes off his tiny little ridiculous glasses, takes his hair out of a big obvious braid, and just puts on some makeup, and it's there.
Yeah, like, it doesn't change his silhouette except that he gets the giant shoulders, but, like, his hair is still... It's not like it was contained by the braid. It was just as rock moldy before.
Yeah.
Fabulously.
Yes, and, like, in their student personas, they all get along great. These three are, like, actually friends.
Yeah, like, and they're very sweet, and he interacts with them a lot, and he's very, like, kind of shy and nice, and,
like
he's, their dynamic.
Yeah, he's kind of jealous of, he keeps saying he's sort of jealous of their dynamic, and what he means is that, okay, let's talk about their dynamic.
Yeah,
it's they cute. They have a kind of red Oni, blue Oni dynamic thing. I mean, like, Kentaro is full of energy, like, too much energy. He's kind of an idiot, and he's also, like, really friendly and outgoing, but also really annoying.
Yeah.
And he can kind of get away with it because he's just so upbeat that he doesn't pay attention to people getting annoyed with him. Takeshi is serious. He thinks he's an actual student here and really wants to do, like, he wants to not only do his job, but also be a student. And, like, he cares about graduating and getting a good job at the end of this. And Kentaro really just wants to hang out with him. Yeah. Kentaro also cooks him a bento every day.
And professes to want to be a wife, and specifically his wife.
Yeah, and this is a thing that, like, it's kind of played for laughs completely in the beginning, but it just becomes the dynamic they have for the rest of the thing. And it's usually, like, it's kind of a joke, and Takeshi is not into it, but he also benefits from it so much, because he's just eating these bentos all the time.
Yeah, and it's cute, and it has a little bit of that, like, oh, you're protesting, but it's, you know, you're actually having fun with this, and...
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's cute, and so it makes sense that Kotobuki would be a little jealous of this best friendship thing going on.
Yeah, yeah, he's like, man, I want a friendship like this. You guys are amazing together. But he also just does hang out with them, and they're really nice to him, and it's fine.
And they all get along, and then eventually he meets Eddie, because she, I don't remember, but she punches them, and he is, like, so enamored of her punching them. It's the cutest thing, and it kind of begins the second plot line that spirals into, you know, becomes the main thing by the second volume, which is this kind of romance between Kotobuki and Eddie, and it's very cute.
Yeah, because she falls in love with him also, in his student form. He, not as the villain, falls in love with her in her position as their director, where she has kind of a cool, like, space babe outfit with some armor and stuff. So, okay, this thing has a huge ongoing joke. They can't seem to actually tell each other's, like, secret identities, even though they're really obvious.
There's a delightful scene towards the end where someone is trying, well, we'll talk about her more, but they get an alternate bad guy who's a lady, and she's trying to convince them that Kotobuki is the evil guy who keeps attacking them, and there has to be, like, a slideshow of, like, how he goes from the one thing to the other thing.
It takes multiple pages for them to, like, accept
this. They're just like, no, that can't be.
But also, like, as I said, I did not realize they didn't know that Nokoru was their chairman, was the general. Like, I did not realize they didn't know this, because this character is, like, very present in their world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they know who Nokoru Imonoyama is. Like, he's the most famous little, like, incredibly Mary Sue OC ever. I love him. He's great. He's an angel. It's fine. But he's like, everyone knows who he is. Of course. Why wouldn't you know who this sixth grader is? Like, I can't imagine high schoolers ever knowing what any sixth grader is in any school. But okay. Everyone knows who he is, but, like, they can't tell that it's him. And I'm like, how can he's just wearing sunglasses. He's still an obvious child. Like, it's fine. But they can't tell.
Yeah.
Also, for some reason, like, there's constant jokes about them not revealing their secret identities, but no one's paying attention and no one really cares.
Yeah.
But the idea that somehow Kotobuki and Eddie, like, kind of don't know that they're the right people. I mean, like, they kind of can't tell who is who, and it really is not until the very end that everybody knows who everybody is.
Yeah, and it kind of takes a bit to ramp up to that, and we get a lot of shenanigans along the way of them kind of defeating him and his minions, and then Nokoru stages this thing where they have to go up against the Man of Many Faces in, like, a play, but also a battle that he instigates because he's a conniving little...
But I need to point out, he doesn't know that Akira, who is also on the student council and is one of the claim campus detectives, he doesn't know that he's Man of Many Faces.
Yeah,
it turns out, we find out, he does not know this.
Which I wasn't really surprised about, but... Because, I mean, we'll talk about more in Clam Campus, but I just assumed because he was instigating it that he was doing it for all involved, not that he was, like, obviously intentionally doing it for the New Clam Boys, but that he, Akira, was just kind of, like, an innocent bystander in this manipulation.
That storyline, ends with Akira's mom's being so excited about the Duke Leon boys that she's like, I need you to steal them for us.
Yeah.
Right? And then, and he does.
Yeah.
Like, they stage this battle slash play, and then, which does involve them saying, man, why would Nokoro Umonoyama make us do this? Won't it betray us? And then the director, who is Nokoro Umonoyama in sunglasses, is like, actually, it's a great idea, and I think he was brilliant for casting. like, it's really cute, where he sits there and, like, praises his own. Anyway, yeah. That whole thing happens, but, like, so, obviously, like, they throw this stupid play slash tokusatsu event, and then the actual evil Monoyama Shopping District Association show up to fight them, and then at the end of this, Akira, like, flies... What is that
just
thing?
Like, yeah, it just scoops them up with a giant, or whatever, yeah. That just, yeah, kidnaps them from the stage.
And that's the end?
And that's the end, and it just cuts to them being shipped back via, like, a cart, or, like, a carton.
Like a crate.
A crate, yeah.
And the mom's thanking them for, like, and there's a little moment where you're like, what did they do to you?
Yeah.
Like, tell us what happened, boys, it's okay.
Yeah, and it's just...
This is the level this thing is at. And it's not long. Like, it's not. It's two volumes, and each of them is, like, a couple short stories. And in the beginning, there really is the sense that, like, okay, this is going to just making fun of Sentai stuff. And one of the big jokes with Sentai stuff, like, as editor Will will complain about, you'll have all of these shows where they'll have all these moves, and then they'll... Sometimes the hero will also have, like, a core of teens who also pilot little jets or something, or the military will be involved, and none of those things ever matter. Every episode is monster attacks, we throw all those things at them, those things fail, the hero does their hero thing, and, like, especially with Ultraman then gets big, which is, I mean, becomes Ultraman, stops pretending to be a small, normal-sized dude, and becomes Ultraman, who's really big. And then he wrestles the monster for a while, and then he does the same super move to defeat him at the end of every episode every time. And that's really repetitive. This show has been running for decades. Every episode is still basically that. And you can see how, like, that's repetitive, and there are people for whom you cannot sit through this. There's other people, especially when you're a really little kid, where that's, like, a really comforting, good place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, side note, who else is really influenced by stuff like Ultraman? Hideaki Anno, who is Gainax, but he is also the writer behind such things as Evangelion, which has a whole lot of Ultraman in it, and is famously a big fan of Ultraman, and is also famously, like, pretty outspoken about kind of autism.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Issues? Yeah, like, he talks about that stuff a lot, and there's a little bit of, like, maybe the repetition of stuff like that, the comfort of that, might be something that does appeal to people who are neurotypical and really need those, like, places to get those nice patterns, those nice comforting patterns that are still exciting in that same way.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some really cool things about, like, why do Sentai shows work even though they're so repetitive, but this makes fun of that in a really gentle kind of way, right? Like, it isn't making fun of that in a, like, oh, this stuff is so dumb. It loves it. Like, they clearly love this stuff. And they say, like, they were big fans of this. This was not coming out of any kind of negative place. Like, this was coming out of a completely, we love this stuff, but we have noticed that these things come up a lot. So the monsters are always really in this. They're gimmicky. Some of them, like, there's the one that's Woltar or whatever. It's not the original Japanese name, but something close to that. And it's just a big, cute stuffed sheep, but it has static electricity that's so strong that you have to hug it because it's so cute, and then you get shocked.
Yeah.
And, like, that's really so funny charming. Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, the boys fail.
Yeah.
Because it's so cute.
I think it's Andy, right, who has to show up and just knock its mask off or whatever so it doesn't look as cute anymore.
And then they can defeat it.
And they can defeat it.
But they do defeat things the same way, like, every time it just like Ultraman, these always, no matter what they do, and they don't do a whole lot other than, like, make some jokes and then do this thing at the end. Usually by the end of each little segment, what is it? It's the Duke Leon Final Crush?
It is the Duke Leon Final Crush!
Yes! And that's just, like, they use it every single time, and it just looks like an explosion. Like, it's not a very detailed move where we could, like,
perform it. Yeah, we don't see it. It's like a black screen with, like, lightning bolts through it or something, so you just know that action is happening.
Yeah, it's a tokusatsu special effects thing. Like, that's definitely what it is, and it's really cute. And characters start to notice more and more throughout the story. Like, this thing becomes so self-aware and so fourth-wall-breaking by the end of it that we start, as we said, with this, like, kind of a parody about Sentai stuff, where we're like, okay, where is this going? And then the weird, like, love polygon between literally just two people, and it's somehow still a love polygon, happens. And then it becomes a love triangle.
Yeah, because Kotobuki, it turns out, is, spoilers, alien prince.
Who's of been course.
Sent to conquer the Earth as part of his, like, coming of age, coming into his rulership thing.
But he's having a lot of trouble doing this, so his fiance has shown up to, like, get it done faster.
Yeah, because the idea is you conquer a minor planet and then you get to basically have your honeymoon there and rule it and stuff.
Yeah.
So it becomes yours. It's part of you. Yeah, it's a coming of age thing.
And she's a mega babe, and she also has a really wonderful tokusatsu villain outfit and shows up, and like, they can't defeat her with the final crush as easily. Like,
yeah.
Like, they can't defeat her as easily. And then, so the entire second volume has swapped from our heroes Kentaro and Takeshi being the main characters to all of a sudden it is just about this romance.
Yeah.
And the heroes protest about how few panels they're showing up in. Like, the end of every volume is them saying they're going to write to Clamp and beg to be in more panels.
Yeah,
and
it's
to be the main characters again.
And I will say, she never gets a name, I don't think, but the fiance is, I think, the first instance of what I think of as, like, the sexy Clamp lady.
Yes.
And we're going to see a lot more of her, but I think this is the first time we've encountered her in a series. So
yes.
It was exciting. I was
yes.
like, I know what you're about.
Yeah, she's a mega babe, and all the high school boys are, like, ready to just do anything for her.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really come up much. Like, she doesn't really use them. She just, mostly she and Eddie just scream and yell at each other. And
yeah, they had a wonderful showdown.
Yeah.
Quite good. But yeah, so as this new plotline progresses, Kotobuki kind of decides that he's going to be on the side of protecting Eddie and, you know, screw his destiny or whatever. And of course, his fiance's not happy about this. And then we get to the scene of her trying to convince them that he is the evil guy, because
yeah.
She obviously knows what's going on and is like, why can't you just recognize him? It's the same person. And they're like, what? Those are two different people. What are you talking about?
Like, I don't even think we're fighting. Like, you can have your fiance. I just want Kotobuki. She's like, no, they are the same guy. Like, no. Same guy. We can't do this.
Yeah, there is, it's not quite related, but there is a delightful side manga that is, like, our favorite thing. That's where they explain how their transformation sequence works.
Oh, it's actually, like, and it's weird, like, it doesn't take place until right around the end here, but it is the best. They describe their quote-unquote transformation, and as we said, like, we know that most of the time, under proper circumstances, they jump down a weird oven
yeah.
in the Dukleon Bakery, and then they're just in their base, and usually their armor kind of shows up around this time. But what is their transformation like? Well, we get this little, like film reel style
yeah.
comic. And it's just like, okay, like, I don't know, Lucy,
it's
take
so
it away.
It's so cute. It's that, like, they have their armor hidden in various strategic locations by Nokoryu, I assume, throughout campus. And they take off whatever they're currently wearing, fold it gently, carefully, and change into the armor. And then hide their original clothing. And then go on their way to being the defenders.
I love that they have to fold their school uniforms.
It's very important. And they complain about how they can't, like, put the uniforms back in where the armor came out of, so they don't really have places to hide it. So they just
they
have
also,
to, like, hide it in a bush.
They don't have spare school uniforms all over the place either.
Yeah. So they're kind of complaining about how it's much more inconvenient to get out of the armor than to get into the armor. And it was just so charming. Like, I expected them to have, like, flashy scenes of them transforming, kind of like Sailor Moon swirling around and whatnot, but no, it's just very practical. And you're right, them having to carefully fold their school uniforms,
it's so good.
Just the best.
They're kind of really good boys. Like, they're good
they're
kids.
Very good boys.
All right, so yeah, it's because by the end it's just a soap opera.
Yeah.
And okay, so we find out that Kotobuki and his evil Omonoyama Chopping District Association goons are all just space aliens.
But
in a big twist, Eddie explains that she is in fact a space cop, she is also an alien, and she is here to help defend the Earth. And then there's sort of a joke where they're like, okay, this is such a backwater, how did you get assigned to this backwater?
Yeah.
Like, this is not an important planet, you are not actually that important, are you? And she's like, shut up. And maybe we should shut up, she's totally awesome. But so, of course, so she's an alien, Kotobuki's an alien, and fiance, who really does not get a name, but Mega Babe fiance, evil Mega Babe fiance, calls home to complain to her future parents-in-law, who are the king and queen of this alien, alien planet or whatever, yeah. alien empire.
Society, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She complains to them about the whole situation, and they're just like,
yeah, they have this line where they're like, well, he was never really for marrying you anyway, and it was kind of on you to convince him, so if he's found someone else he loves, like, that's fine.
Yeah, they're cool with it, and then
prefer that.
She's fairly crestfallen, and, like, that's the end of it. I don't know, at some point in this, like, Nokoto's adorable lapdog gets turned into a giant dog, and, like, that's supposed to be the big, like, the big final battle is with the giant, adorable dog who just wants to play.
Yeah.
And in order to solve this problem, we discover that, like Ultraman, our boys also have a giant form, which yes. we don't know how any of this works,
no.
and it never comes up. This is not technology that, like, anyone thinks Clamp Campus people have ever again, but just for this moment, they get to, they don't fight, they play with the giant dog.
Yeah, because once they're the appropriate size relative to the dog, they realize it's just trying to play, not trying to squish everyone, and so they just, like, play with the dog,
yeah.
and then they fix it.
Yeah.
I don't remember how they de-giantify.
I don't think we see that.
Okay.
I think that by the end, it's just, like, we have
I think they beg the fiance to just fix it at some point.
God, do they? Yeah, like, the end is so just, a clusterfuck of rom-com bullshit
happening. Yeah, it's beautiful. Like, the quote-unquote plot is not what you're paying attention to anymore.
No, it's just gone.
You're focused on the dynamic and the romance.
And then we get our little, our parting shot for this era of their story is that Eddie and Kotobuki have joined Duke Leon as new members.
Yeah, so it's very cute and very open for continuation, Clamp, which in an interview we read that's on Chibi Uto's wonderful website, and we'll link in show notes and stuff.
Yeah, it is in the Clamp no Kiseki volume that has anything about Duke Leon, and I think the Clamp Campus Detectives one, I think it's that
It's the same volume. I think it's volume 5.
Yeah.
And anyway, it has an interview where they talk about how much they love this series, and would kind of love to do it again or revisit it if anyone wanted to pay them to do that, and it's just delightful to think that they get so much pleasure out of this. Like, that makes me really happy.
Yeah. Okay, so there is a drama CD for this, and we cannot find it.
We
will cover it if someone can help us find it. We cannot find
it. Yeah, we looked hard, guys. I went deep into the old internet. And
we found terrifying, sketchy, virus-ridden, like, download things where we're like, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
That's not where we're at.
But
if someone has a copy of it somewhere, like, if I can borrow it, that'd be wonderful. We do hear that they had actual tokusatsu theme song writers, like, make a song for it. We sort of assume that that same song is the one that the boys hear over the loudspeaker to, like, indicate that it's time to go jump into the oven to go transform.
Yeah, because that's how, especially in the first volume, they get summoned, is that this assumably pop song or whatever that's fairly innocuous, I assume, is the concept, is just playing over the loudspeakers, and they know, that's the music, we're being summoned. And I definitely imagine it as sounding kind of like a really inspiring Sentai opening theme song.
Lucy found all the lyrics to it that show up in the comic, and I think maybe we'll put that somewhere in the...
Yeah, I was thinking of putting on the website somewhere, just in case anyone ever wants it.
Yeah, it's really, really cute.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure it's not an actual song, at least until after. It may be the song that appears in the drama CD, but I don't believe it was a pop song they were quoting or something that was from the 90s.
There is a little chunk at the very end
mm-hmm.
that is like a flash forward, just like in Niji Menso, Man of Many Faces.
And Tokyo Babylon.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh, interesting how all of these... I suppose that actually Rig Veda did that too.
Yeah, it did. They
the
like
end
to
was
do
a big
little,
skip
like,
ahead.
Flash
forward.
Yeah.
Coda. They like to put a coda on it that's just a little...
The opposite of an epilogue. Epilogue. Right?
Yeah.
Is that what an epilogue is?
Yeah, an epilogue is.
An epilogue.
The opposite of a prologue.
Yes,
yeah.
That's what I was... It's fine.
What? How advanced of a degree do you have in English again? Pretty advanced.
Master's in writing? This isn't writing. This is talking. I don't have a master's in talking.
It's true. Oh god, neither of us do. Thank you, everybody, for putting up with that.
Apparently I don't have a master's in pronouncing Japanese names when they're in this book either, Jesus.
Oh, we definitely don't.
We're not that bad at Japanese, but for some reason like, this volume just broke me.
Like, we're fine, but we just talk- there's a lot of, like, so many syllables. So many syllables.
Well, for some reason, like, usually clamp character names have stuck in my head pretty well, but Dupleon I did so little with that it's not as ingrained. Yeah. Like, so, like, I still can't tell the two main characters' names apart. Like, I have notes to myself that aren't even the colors, so it's not even all that helpful. but yeah, it. So I apologize for not being able to talk.
We're doing our best. Mm. All right, so this little epilogue. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Describe the epilogue to me, Lucy.
It's set in, like, 4 years in the future or something, once they are businessmen. And it's at this business that is owned by
Higashi Kunimaru-kun.
Yeah.
It's the Higashi Kunimaru Corporation.
Yeah.
Man, I also screwed that up.
You were better than me. I guess we cut the me not being able to say that name at all, though.
Oh, yeah.
We deleted that. No one will ever know.
The world does not need to know.
It's okay. I couldn't say Taishakuten, apparently, either. Oh. Poor Will. Will's so patient. Anyway, yes. Takeshi has gotten hired at this corporation without realizing somehow that it's his friend's family's corporation, and so he is now his secretary.
Just back to the same old dynamic. But also Kentaro still makes him, like, a big fancy bento every day.
Yeah, no, it's very cute. Like, they have a whole argument about it. He's like, your boss should be making you a bento!
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to be in management. Why am I a secretary?
And he's just like, so we can always be together. And you're like, oh, God. I mean, on the one hand, that's terrible.
Yes.
What an awful, selfish thing to do to your friend. That is cruel and terrible. On the other hand, it's hilarious and adorable.
Especially your friend. Like, they make references throughout that while Kentaro is from, like, a wealthy family, Takeshi is not. And they call him poor. I don't know how. Well, they're not clear by what degree of that they mean. I mean, it's a fancy rich kid school, so they could just mean, like, upper middle class instead of upper class.
But you do have to, I mean, like, this is also a school where supposedly you're there because you're a talented genius, not because you have money.
Yes.
But we know who decides what a talented genius is.
Yes,
generally. People with money.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so it's a horrible thing to do to your friend who's already trying to, like, you know, rise in the world a little, that'd be more financially stable, to be like, nah, you're qualified for management and you've got really good training, but I'm gonna make you my secretary.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. And it kind of leads into, I think, our last discussion and the reason why we needed to put a pin in Chojin Bottom 1, which is, how gay is this?
Yeah,
I'm going to say, just, like, my blanket thing is, this is as gay as you want it to be.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, everybody, it is, like, absolutely, like, if you want it to be, it is yours. Like, let it be gay.
And yeah, and they are definitely, like, it is certainly gay friendly, if nothing else. I went back and forth because I couldn't tell if how much of a joke the I want to be your wife thing was, because I think it could have been a joke that was carried off once and then it bugged his friend, so he just came back to it because he's that kind of annoying friend and he enjoyed that kind of, like, poke the wound thing.
Yeah, and he does say sort of suggestive things to him throughout the story. Like, there's a little touch of, like, homoeroticism. Like, to be clear, you were supposed to notice that they're very shippable. Like, their dynamic is supposed to be homoerotic. Like, it's not super there. It's not there on the level of other comics they have where they're just straight-up gay couples half the time. Like, this is not as overt as that, but the characters themselves just aren't those kinds of people.
Yeah, like, this is not like Tokyo Babylon where it's definitely going on, like, where you're definitely supposed to take that from it. This is more subtle, so you can kind of do with it what you want, but you're definitely encouraged to think of them that way.
Yeah, I think it's really a fun read to see that. Also, like, they're both so grossed out by the heterosexual relationship that shows up. I love that. I think that is such a funny element of it, and I'm so willing to just go for that as being confirmation. Like, I'm fine with that.
They're
both just being like, oh man, oh dear.
as to whether or not it's, like, great gay representation, I think there's, like, it's not bad representation, and you're perfectly fine taking it that way. Like, there, you know, even within the story, like, even if it is a joke, everybody reacting to it is totally positive about it. Like,
yeah.
when they make this joke at Kotobuki's, just like, oh, that's so sweet, you would make a wonderful wife.
Yeah.
So, like, it's totally supportive and exists in a happy world, so go forth.
I feel strongly this is, like, it's ours if we want it. It's totally fine. It's also for anybody who sees their, like, straight friendship dynamic in it, that's also fine. Like, totally cool. I'm not gonna tell you that you're wrong, but I'm definitely gonna say, like, yeah, this thing, like, that element is extremely present.
Oh, yeah, like, shout out to my high school wife, Tori. Like, this was definitely dynamics we just joked around with in high school, too. So I can see it either way, but, like, I'm quite happy for them to just be happily gay.
They would definitely be happier, I think, if they could, like, figure that out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I also feel like maybe they eventually will.
Yeah. And I mean, again, it's not that complex of a story.
No.
So, like,
it
is cute how grossed out they are by, like, romance. And I couldn't tell if it was because, like, they just didn't care about romance, or they found Eddie so terrifying that they couldn't imagine anyone getting that close to her.
Well, I don't think either of them were particularly into Kotobuki either.
Yeah.
So there's a minute where they're just like, these are two people who we cannot fathom ourselves dating. Yeah. And we're a little confused about why these two people are so over the top into each other.
Yeah, it's very cute when they, like, find themselves on a date with them, because, like, basically those two are both like, introduce me! And so they all go out to tea, and then our two main characters are just kind of like, I don't think we need to be here. I think we're the third wheels. We're just gonna... Goodbye! Have fun!
In the epilogue, they're still Dukleon, aren't they?
Yeah, even as businessmen, they are still Dukleon.
Yeah, they still have to put on their stupid robot suits and go fight. I say robot suits, it's just armor. It's just like, it's a little RoboCop looking, which was sort of intentional. I'm not sure that Clamp was intending to have it be RoboCop looking, but G-Bond, that they were very inspired by, was very RoboCop inspired.
The progression, yeah.
Yeah, so we're getting all through this. Okay, so our discussion of, like, how gay is it, though, I will say, like, it's clear that they love that dynamic between the two of them and teasing that dynamic, because that Sentai show that we were discussing, the Chojin Bonom 1, is definitely about two boys who have the same names as these two.
The first names, anyway.
Yes, the first names, not the same last names. So the same first names as these two, who, due to space alien magic screw-ups, I mean, the kind of stuff that always happens, right? Like, a monster shows up, and some other creature shows up and says, you guys are a superhero now and have to fight it. They combine to become Chojin Bottom 1, right? Two boys have to combine to be one. And I don't know, like, really big influence on my childhood was how much I loved New Mutants, and there are two male characters who combine into one character a lot in that.
Oh,
and that was cool. A big deal. I mean, sort of combined into one character. One of them is, like, a space robot monstrosity who is adorable, and he kind of can, like, become actually mecha armor for Doug Ramsey or Cypher, who has no, I mean, his mutant powers, he can speak any language. He's a great asset for the team, but he can't fight. But when his best friend Warlock becomes his weird armor, they can fight together. And I think it's really cute how, like, that idea, which that's New Mutants at this point, it would be late 80s, early 90s, but, like, that stuff is so much of this era. And, like, I don't know, it does my queer heart a lot of good. I can really see the sort of, like, weird foundational stuff there, where you're just like, oh, me and my friend are so close that, like, we're like one person. And that can be platonic. It can also be extremely not platonic. And I kind of love that that is one of the huge influences on this and where they came from, is they're like, okay, what if they're still two different people, but they kind of need each other? Because one of them is a Genki idiot and the other one is a tsundere jerk. But together they can fight evil.
Yeah, I'm always kind of a sucker for the, like, opposites attract / complete each other thing. Like,
you sure are.
I just think it's good, and I think it kind of works out often in reality, too. So
it does.
It's good. It's a good dynamic.
Yeah. I think this thing is so much about their dynamic. And, I mean, yeah, like, that's a big part of any media that's about a romance, right? It's like, you have to be intrigued by the dynamic between those characters. This one is just, like, it's silly, it's wholesome, and it's definitely got queer themes. It's not, like, really deep queer themes, and it's really, really, like, there's a lot of plausible deniability. Like, it doesn't have to be if you're a person who just, like, doesn't see it there, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it is intended for you to at least have it, it's at least hinted at on purpose.
Yeah, and I'm, like, not mad that it doesn't go any further. Like, it doesn't need to, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah. As I said, it is as gay as you need it to be for yourself. Like, mm-hmm. it is just as gay as you believe it is. Like, totally fine for yeah. anybody. Like, whatever your threshold is for that, you are correct for yourself. Like, it's totally fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, this is a great read.
Yeah, I was, again, I mean, I said this earlier, but I was surprised by how much I enjoyed this. Like, I thought I would like it, and I thought I would, you know, appreciate, like, oh my god, the cameos, guys.
There are so many cameos.
Because as we said, this is when they were kind of just taking off, and so you can see, like, their excitement kind of reflected in so many cameos. Like, obviously all the Clamp Campus connections, but, like, we have a few of the teachers that we're going to get to when we talk about Clamp Campus detectives, because they're complicated references, but, like, they have this whole scene from X, and they have, you know, side characters running around, and it's just, it's so, so delightful.
Yeah, you definitely have Professor Ashido, and we're like, you see him so briefly, but we could, it's like, from a mile away, we know that hair.
Yeah, that hair is too unique.
Because he somehow has, like, a widow's peak, and the really tall bangs, but also the mom bangs with the little claw in the front. He's just got it all, yeah. And he's delightful as a professor.
Yeah, and it's just, it's so good.
Yeah, there's characters who are like, we mentioned this, but still, like, there are characters you're like, this is definitely someone to you, author.
Yeah.
This is someone you know, but it's not someone we know. And that stuff just feels so much like being back in high school again. Because we always did stuff like that. Like, if you have a bunch of kind of writerly, drawery, creative friends, like, that's a really fun way to play together, is you
yeah, make we're always drawing each other's characters, and we still do. I mean, I don't, because I don't really draw much anymore, but, like, it's still a thing that, as adults, we do when we're playing with each other's characters.
Yeah.
Like, it's just kind of part of that deal.
Yeah, no, like, it's fun. It's really fun to do collaborative stuff. I mean, like, there's lots of professional projects that are very collaborative and that come from stuff like this. And I think it's just interesting to be able to look back at this time where this thing that was so fun for them and so playful was published. It ran in a magazine, and to this day it's something we're talking about decades later.
Yeah, and, like, there have been some Clamp works that really have fallen into obscurity to the point where we can't find them, which is why we haven't touched on some of them. Like, Cluster is kind of an art book comic that we might talk more about at some point, but it's not translated into English as far as I know, so, like, there are some things that we can't get, but this, I'm so happy this survived.
Yeah. And I'm really excited to talk more about the Clamp Campus stuff, the Clamp School stuff. I always say Clamp Campus because to me it's the Clamp Campus Detectives.
Yeah.
But Clamp Gaku and Clamp School is so much more properly how I should be calling it. I'm so sorry. We always get the things like, if it was that foundational, it just, you get it stuck in your head. But it'll be fun to talk more about that next time when we dive right into Clamp Campus.
Yeah.
Right now, I think we're scheduled to do two episodes on it and then an episode on the anime. I am not certain whether that will actually happen, but it might, because I think that we may be able to say enough about, like, there may be enough things to say about, like, why would you ever do anything like this? Like, and I think there's a lot for us to discuss about, like, collaborations and groups of friends making stuff.
Yeah.
Like, we can come back to that a little bit. There's so much to say.
Well, especially since Clamp Campus touches so many other things, I think that giving the intro episode and the first volume, like, one episode together, and then a separate volume where we talk about the later, and then a separate episode where we talk about the later volumes, I think that is going to work really well. We might find that we need an episode per volume, and there are three volumes, so we will see. But the goal is two episodes of the manga, one in the anime, and then we'll be able to launch into the other series. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm really excited about all that.
All right. So I think that kind of wraps up this episode. So you can follow us on Twitter at ClampCastPod, Facebook at Clampcast in Wonderland, and we also have a Facebook group if you want to kind of get into deeper discussions there. And our website is ClampCastInWonderland.com, where we do try and keep, like, reading lists and all of the episodes, and occasionally we'll do a longer post about something, and the recipes, which I'm still working on, will be on there.
Oh, yes. Today's recipe is the fight on Duclean Parfait, and I made, like, a 4-layered agar thing, and it's a monstrosity.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited. We're gonna get to go eat it now.
Yeah, it's
I'm
been setting, excited. And it's been a process, so I'm really excited to see how it turned out.
Yeah, we did a special flavored layer for each of our main characters.
Yeah, and we do have 4 recipes from Tokyo Babylon that, if they're not up yet, should be on the way. I'm working on them. They're done. I just have to put them in posts that people can read.
Oh, good. Good to know that the work has been done, just not that last little sharing the world.
It's just the post-production stuff.
Oh, no. Well.
All right. Until next time, remember that everything will be all right.
And try not to lose an eye.